All right, let me jump on over here to the Right Side Way monologue. And I say again, my hope is that with this monologue and the content of this show today, that I can do honor not just to the veterans who gave so much on D-Day, but also to this state, which had such a huge role in that, which I'll get to more as we go along. But yeah, today is a significant date on the calendar. It's a significant day that too many have just moved past because they've not been taught about the heroism and the sacrifice that not only makes this day special, but that truthfully saved the world from tyranny. No lie. Today is the 80th anniversary of the D-Day invasion, when the forces of good came together and decided that no single country would be allowed to take or terrorize or topple other nations for no other reason than just that the tyrant wanted what they had. In my study at home, I have several items that I would not take money for. They are symbols of the sacrifice and service of men in my family who have served before me and some who are serving now. On my wall, there's three rifles. Three symbols of three generations. One old black powder Enfield rifle that I brought back from Afghanistan, one that my father brought back from Vietnam, and one that my grandfather brought back from World War II. Now, they all hang together because of what they mean to me, because of what they signify. Three generations of service and war. That freedom is not free, that liberty is not lax, and the honor of serving in uniform for something bigger than oneself is not just a recruiting poster. It's real. So my grandfather, he entered the service and went straight to the war. He got his commission as an Army officer from Alabama Polytechnic, which is now Auburn University, in 1942. And he came home 3 years later, after serving in the glider troops, first with the 82nd Airborne and then with the 18th Airborne Corps. And he marched across Europe, and he endured the Battle of the Bulge, and he went on to serve through the next 30 years. In a shadow box on the shelf in my study is his general officer's issued pistol, his general officer's belt buckle and general star, and a set of glider wings. These are things that I hope to pass on to the next generations of my own family. They mean something. They mean everything, really. So 80 years ago today, men like my grandfather went ashore and parachuted into the darkened night and assaulted and dug in German forces. And the fog of war does not even begin to describe the horror of that combat. Never in history has such an invasion force been launched, and we can only hope that it will never be needed again. Kids being raised today need to know that they might not be here, or at least might not be free, if the men of D-Day had failed. It was called Operation Overlord. Many don't know, too, that Huntsville native Carl T. Jones was specially selected to be one of the key planners for the D-Day invasion. Jones had been one of the few officers who had ever participated in a beach landing as he defended Alaska's Aleutian Islands. For Operation Overlord, 7,000 ships and landing craft manned by 195,000 naval personnel, 133,000 troops from the U.S., Great Britain, and Canada went ashore, 13,000-plus paratroopers landed in the darkened night. It would be as if the entire population of North Alabama took up arms and moved from one place to another at the same time. It was epic in its scale. It was heavy in its price. It was called by some the longest day, and by others it was called the Day of Days. So history tells us that the final decision to give the order to launch the invasion rested with General Eisenhower. While also sitting on my shelf in my study at home is a brass shell casing that came from Eisenhower's funeral. Eisenhower is said to have labored over the final call to launch the invasion, feeling the burden of so many lives that were under his command, willing to do what seemed impossible as long as he gave the order. But the weather was awful, the enemy was dug in, and the world had been at war for years. But then Eisenhower settled into his decision, knowing that there was no other way, and he wrote to the men under his command and had his words issued out to the troops on the eve of the great invasion. Some of you may have seen the memo before, but I'm going to read it now. He said this. He said, "Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade, towards which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and the prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944, and much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940 and 41. Our air offensive has severely reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war, and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking." And the memo was assigned Dwight D. Eisenhower. Within hours of giving the order, the first plane of paratroopers crossed the English Channel carrying Pathfinders from the 101st Airborne Division. Small groups of men who went in hours before anybody else, totally isolated, cut off from reinforcements, to mark the drop zones for waves of airborne troopers to follow. Places like St. Mary Eglise became landmarks as airborne troops scattered, then regrouped, and then fought, and they took those towns. Glider troops from the British Ox and Bucks Light Infantry, in a mission called Operation Deadstick, landed near a quiet canal in the French countryside. Wearing the image of a winged Pegasus on their uniforms, the glider riders seized a key bridge which became known to this day as Pegasus Bridge. Historians believe that their efforts are what stopped the Germans from being able to reinforce the troops at Normandy beaches. The very first casualty of the Normandy invasion occurred that night at Pegasus Bridge when British Lieutenant Den Brothridge was killed in the fight. But they took that bridge. Waves of men came ashore that morning at beaches codenamed Utah and Omaha, Gold and Juno. It is said that blood was so thick that the sand turned red near the waterline, and men came ashore wading, swimming, many drowning, but still advancing and firing on the enemy. Leaders who were downed were replaced by men who took charge in their place. Hours were spent trying to advance mere feet under fire. Obstacles, strafing aircraft, reinforced pillboxes, mortar fire. It was said that the uncommon became common as men did things that made no sense on a regular day, because it was no regular day. And they took those beaches. And not far down the shoreline, men of the 2nd Ranger Battalion became known as the Boys of Pointe du Hoc as they climbed ropes up 90-foot cliffs while Germans from above rained down bullets and grenades. And they took those cliffs. The D-Day Memorial Foundation says that 4,415 Allied troops died on that first day. First day, one day, 4,400 dead 80 years ago today. More than 5,000 more were wounded. And over the coming weeks, the Battle of Normandy saw 73,000 Allied troops killed and 153,000 wounded. Think about that. It's epic in its scope. The equivalent of having every man, woman, and child in Huntsville shot. I mean, think about that. The level of sacrifice is really staggering. But they did it. They did it at huge cost with great reward. 11 weeks later, Allied troops liberated Paris 2 months ahead of schedule and began slogging their way across the rest of Europe to VE Day. So D-Day, the longest day, the day of days, 80 years ago today. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, I'll be honest with you. There are aspects of that story that are just unbelievable. Like, could you write a movie script in fiction and make it any more than what we saw that day? 80 years ago today. Should never be forgotten. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.